So I left the movie theater with so many feelings for the House of Durin. Like, you have no idea. And I mean, I kind of, having gotten back from the movie theater, I was like, okay, first stop is the AO3, obviously, because that's like, you know, what you do. You go home and you dive into a pile of fic with all your favorite characters, and, you know, it extends that whole happy, glowy feeling. I'm kind of getting the feeling that Bilbo Baggins Thorin Oakenshield is a thing that everyone's shipping, and I didn't get that at all. Like, okay, I get that they hugged a bit, but that was not the feelings of pairingness that I got when at the theater. And, okay, this is going to be unsurprising to anyone who realized how many supernatural podfics I've made, but the fact that there's already a word, we've got Durincest, I mean, that just makes me, yeah, all the Feely and Keely feelings. Oh, just that one scene with the storm giants and his face and, oh, my heart. And, okay, there's only, like, 6 pages of fic of Feely and Keely as, you know, starring characters on the AO3, which, oh, 6, that's a big number. No, it's not. No, it's not. And it's like, okay, sometimes they're like, oh, yeah, we're major characters, except it's background to, what are we calling it now, Baggins-shield, Bilbo and Thorin. I didn't get that. Thorin seems very, very austere to me and not at all shippable at this moment in time. He seems very, very cranky and focused and not in the mood for, you know, romps by the firelight. I don't know. I just didn't get that from the movie. But, oh my god, all the Feely and Keely. So I was thinking about it, right? I was going through AO3 and I was like, all the bits of fic, and there's this one where where it's like a tiny little ficlet, and I'm actually waiting on author permission to podfic, but it's like pre-movie, and it's just like the boys growing up in Ered Luin, and there's a scene where Dees is doing their hair, and she's like, Mah! So I was thinking about it, and I'm pretty sure that I've come up with the formula for my absolute best, this is the story of my heart, this is what I want to see someone write for me. Or in general, this is the story that I want to see that's still not at the AO3, but it's probably someplace, because I haven't, like, you know, I haven't gone scouring the internet, I've just been clicking on names so far. But, alright, so it makes sense, well, in my head anyway, Feely and Keely were probably unholy terrors growing up. Because what, like, let's say a quarter at a generous, oh geez, I haven't read the books in such a long time, and one of the kids I sit for is reading The Hobbit right now, so I've got, like, sort of a refresher course in what actually happened in the books, but Jesus, it's been, like, a decade since the last time I read them. So, we're gonna base this sort of on movie canon, and then also all the things that, leftover feelings from the Warner Brothers cartoon that, holy crap, like, that whole, the animated scene with the goblins and the bit with the spiders, like, still flashbacks of terror. Yeah, not my favorite. So anyway, we're gonna base this on, like, bare scraps of knowledge remembered from the books and mostly in movie canon. But let's say a quarter of Erebor got out and didn't get flash roasted, right? And then they spent the next 10, 15 years wandering, looking for some place to settle down, and they finally get to the Blue Mountains, they finally get Ered Luin, and they start to settle, and everyone's still, like, really cranky and displaced, and hardly any female dwarves made it out, you know, hardly any people who weren't soldiers, and there's this whole mentality of how do you adjust to, you know, nomadic lifestyle when, you know, the last 10 generations of your ancestors, you have such a cultural identity in the Lonely Mountain, right? And I really, really doubt that a lot of kids got out, because usually when you have an evacuation like that, it's, okay, women and children first, but if you're coming up from, yeah, I don't think, in my head, a lot of soldiers got out, a lot of craftsmen got out, because they were sort of, you know, the marketplaces or whatever are up by the doors for when they allowed men under the mountain or they allowed visitors under the mountain, but that the homestead would have been deeper down, because that's, you know, safer, it's easier to protect. But with Smaug blocking the doors and shooting fire down the mountain, I really think a lot of the women and kids died. Sad. Tear. Dead dwarves. Anyway, so they're finally, it's 15 years later and everyone's settled down at least a little bit. They all got itchy feet. Nobody's happy. But it's not like a lot of kids made it out. So every last child is going to be that much more precious. Which means, of course, that all the parents are a little more doting and all the, you know, random other people are a little more forgiving and a little more indulgent. Indulgent is the best word for their new offspring because there certainly aren't a lot of offspring left. And the House of Durin is what? Thorin, Dis, and then her kids? Because Honor is dead, right? He dies early on. So basically, in my head, Feely and Keely had the run of the place between being royalty and being kids that there just weren't enough of them around to, you know, make the adults feel like reprimanding them as much. They were just in everybody's business and playing pranks on everybody and being unholy terrors and getting underfoot and just all the mischief and nonsense. And at the same time, Thorin is trying, and Dis too, because she was a princess, right? I mean, she wouldn't have ruled, but she still would have known all the protocol and all the this is my family history, let me pass it down to you in oral tradition. And it just would have been this amazing, all the family feels. And I really want the story of them growing up and getting underfoot and being like, here is some stuff about dwarf culture. Here is how they tried to recreate the House of Durin. It's not like they could bring the family silver with them when they evacuated. Hello. You barely got out with the clothes on your back. So it's not like a lot of the royal family's artifacts lasted. And it's all very whatever you remember from storytelling and all the official, like, I went through etiquette class and so now I know how to bow properly and which fork to use and what you say when you have a delegation of men versus a delegation from the Iron Mountains versus, you know, now what do we say to the elves because they were bastards, you know? So I really want the story of the boys growing up and being, like, munchkins. Ugh, there's a fic somewhere where somebody called them badgers. You know, baby dwarves are badgers. Like, just so cute because they burrow. Oh, and just being adorable and, oh, and like, Dis trying to be like, okay, let me braid your hair and tell you the story of the time that your great uncle, blah, 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 saved the mountain from a flood or whatever. And trying to pass on as much of the oral tradition as possible because it's definitely not like the history books made it out of the mountain. And trying to preserve their culture as much as she could. And meanwhile, Thorin is super cranky, because he is the crankiest of the crankers. And, like, he's very, his father's dead, and his grandfather's dead, and holy crap, he's in charge of this group of refugees. So Thorin's, like, trying to put his, you know, delegation skills to work, and he's trying to keep the kingdom alive as much, as best he can, even without having a mountain to be under to provide this unity. But at the same time, because of this, like, weight of the world that's been so suddenly thrust upon his shoulders, because he should have had a good 400 years, right? I mean, Thror was at the peak of his life. Thrain was nowhere, you know, still another 200 years of life. Thorin is, I mean, yes, I guess in my head he's a legal adult in the dwarf culture, but he's not, like, this never should have been his burden yet. So he's trying to piece together this whole scattered, the Kingdom of Erebor has been cast into, you know, cast asunder, basically, and everyone's all scattered to the winds, and he's trying to make, like, this cohesive unit of all the people who are left, but, like, without the roots of their family and their ancestors, it's not this, and he's trying to make this home for them under, you know, the Blue Mountains, and it's not the same at all. And every time they try to, like, I just want a story where it's like every time they try to restart or reset or make a home, there's always that, like, that stone in your shoe, that popcorn kernel in your teeth that's niggling at you about this is okay, but it's not right. this is always going to be a poor substitute to the thing that we had, you know? So I just feel like it's, that's a large portion of why he's driven to go and try to reclaim Erebor, not once, but twice, you know? That every time they try to restart this, you know, their family, their kingdom, their royal lineage and everything that's going on, there's always that little niggling, you know, thorn that's just like, this may be all right for now, but it's not right. Excuse me. And then the boys are slowly growing up. Feely is, what, 5 years older, according to the books? And Keely is just the rambunctious one. And Feely, too, I feel like he would be a crazy troublemaker because nobody would, he comes across as the responsible brother. So whenever he does pull a prank, nobody suspects him. And, oh, geez, I want, like, a short little interlude where, because Gimli is, what, 15 years younger than them? So, like, oh, geez, I just want, like, a cute little interlude where Gimli tags along as, like, they're just, oh, like, oh, I want to follow my friends. And then, like, no, we're playing with each other, go bother someone else, you know? Like, tagging along, like, Linus or something with his little blanket. Only in this case it's chainmail and an axe. It's a toddler's axe for teething. You know? And I want like an interlude where Feely is learning silversmithing from Uncle Thorin. And Uncle Thorin is, you know, kind of brusque about it because he doesn't really know how to interact with small children. But at the same time, they're like, he's got this whole feeling of have to pass on the legacy because that's the only steady thing we have in dwarf culture right now. Because all their artifacts were left behind, all their great works of metal and precious gems were left behind. So basically all that's really left of dwarven culture is anything that was on your back when you escaped and anything that was in your mind. The craftsmanship, like the techniques, it's whoever remembers it and can pass it on. And it's whoever remembers the storytelling and can pass it on. So, and then I kind of want like, oh, I don't know, like little interludes of Thorin taking Feely and Keely out for nature walks and being like, here's how you, because he, of course he had like an itchy foot, he had to wander, because that's part of canon too, that he, even though they had like the settlement at Erin Luin, I really don't think he would have had an easy time of staying there, you know, because of how much it wasn't right, and every similarity just highlighted how much it was wrong. So I want, like, stories of him taking Feely and Keely out on, like, camping trips and teaching them how to survive in the wild and build forts out of sticks and just, like, you know, warrior culture kind of thing. And I want a story of how Keely discovered that he was good at the bow. I want, like, Feely to be like, okay, I have, like, a throwing hammer or whatever. And then, like, I have my sword and Keely's just, like, playing with someone's whatever. And then he picks it up and it's like, okay, this is going to be, I want to start with how he discovered that he was going to be an archer. And where did that come from? Because it's not the, you know, he stands out against all the other dwarves of their party in the movie because they've all got, like, short-range weapons. I think the longest range, other than Keely's arrows is what? Ori's slingshot is the other long-range weapon. Everyone else has hammers, has axes, has, Jesus, Bomber has, like, a stick, right? He does that thing where he holds the stick and he knocks all the, well, I guess it's not a stick, it's a staff. But, you know, they've all got short-range melee weapons, and Keely has a long-range weapon. And what is the cultural significance of having a long-range weapon? Is it because he's younger and therefore it keeps him out of direct contact of fighting? Is it because he's royalty and he gets to use something that's, you know, above the rest, literally, because archers usually have a position of higher, you know, height to shoot down upon the enemy? How did that happen? Because is it left over from one time that Thranduil was there and he wasn't being an asshat? You know, is it, ah, geez, because bows are traditionally elvish weapons. So I want, like, that story. How did that come to happen? Is it because he, like, dug it out of a storage bin in one of the towns of men where they were doing work and just picked it up from a human? Or what, you know? And then I want, like, more stories of Feely being the world's best brother, which, of course, feeds into my whole, like, Wincest thing. And I want, just all the Sam and Dean feels that I have from, like, my very first days of Supernatural, but transferred to Feely and Keely. So, like, super brotherhood, and I would lay down my life to protect you, and you're the only family I need. Well, they've also got their mom and they've got Thorin, so they're not quite as messed up as the Winchesters. But, like, you're the person I rely on to have my back, and you're the person who guards me while I sleep, and you're the person I would sell my soul for to keep safe. Just, oh my god, Keely's face and Feely's face when they were on opposite sides of the Storm Giant's legs and you thought he was getting crushed, and oh, my heart. So I want, like, a story of, okay, because by the time the company heads out of the Shire and they start off on their quest to find the Lonely Mountain, Feely and Keely are essentially teenagers in Dwarvish culture, right? They're 70s and 80s in years of men, which works out to, like, 18 and 20 in terms of, like, being on the cusp of adulthood or whatever, or is it 16 and 18? On the cusp of adulthood. You know, they're still basically unblooded, untried. You know, if they'd still lived at Erebor, these guys would be just barely on the cusp of making their own way in the world, leaving their mother's hearth. So I want, like, the boys' first time on an outing where they get attacked by orcs. And because they're not unfamiliar with orc packs. There's a scene in The Hobbit where Keely is pulling Bilbo's legs and he's trying to, like, scare him a little bit with the stories of orcs. But, excuse me, and it kind of sounds like maybe they've never had an experience with orcs before. So maybe it's just, okay, it's just the first time that they're beset upon by wargs. They've never actually seen orcs close up until that scene where they're getting chased and then, and then they end up going to the elves. But, like, okay, so I want a story where Feely and Keely and Thorin and, I don't know, Dwalin, because he's pretty badass and he's got head tattoos and that's always awesome. I don't know, they're in a group and who's a tinker? Balfour was a tinker? They're in a group and they're transporting some metalwork from the Blue Mountains into a settlement of men and they're doing trading stuff like that, right? And they're beset by wargs because I don't want them to have ever met any orcs yet. And Keely is doing his thing with his bow and he's shooting arrows and he's still, like, kind of quaking in his boots at the same time because this is real danger as opposed to, you know, the sort of fictionalized I feel like dwarves wouldn't sanitize their stories. They're of hardier stock than men. But there's distance between the stories your mother and your uncle tells of the danger that past members of the House of Durin had gotten into, and then being in a first-person situation where that is a warg trying to tear your brother's legs off, you know? So I feel like Keely is sort of shaking in his boots as he's shooting down at the wargs, and Feely only has a sword. He's up close and personal, and the only way, that scene where the company is beset upon, they're being chased, and Radagast is trying to lead the orcs, on a merry chase and distract them, but then there's that one orc and that one warg that finds them, and then Keely shoots him, and then it takes, like, four dwarves to be dealing, like, blunt force trauma to this thing until it dies. It's super up close and personal. It's super immediate. And I feel like the first time this happens for Feely and Keely, it's because Feely is trying to save Keely. He's trying to protect his brother. And I want a story of, like, holy crap, we just had the adrenaline crash. What the hell do we do now? I need to hold my brother and hug him close and sniff him and to make sure he's still alive, you know? Like, werewolf pack feels. Oh my god, my fandoms are crossing. I had so many Thorin equals Derek Hale feelings because he had eyebrows and loyalty is important to him, and his family was destroyed by a nemesis, and also his home was destroyed by a fire. And then his nemesis comes back to taunt him. Oh my god, and he's watching out for his pack of companions, and he has the outsider that he's not sure if he should trust, and he is sad, and he is broody, and he holds grudges, and he has, did I mention the eyebrows? Oh my god, I had so many Derek Hale equals Thorin feelings, and that's not even like, not even the point. The point is, after Feely has to get up close and personal to keep this warg off his brother, I don't know, maybe it snuck around some rocks and tried to leap on him. But it's his first, he's young, he's like, okay, he's super, he's like, okay, 40, he's like 15 in human years, he's like, you know, he's teenager in dwarf years, and like, holy crap, what is the situation where he realizes that how very much he would put his life on the line for his brother, you know? And I just have all these, like, Sam and Dean in seasons 2 and 3, where they're all, I would give my life for you, and I would save your butt at the expense of my own, and you would do it right back for me because we are super codependent. I have that kind of feelings for Feely and Keely. I feel like they're very, the survival of the one is integral to the survival of the other, you know? I feel like they're maybe not quite as reckless as the Winchesters. So I want that story where the boys are on their first adventure. And then, of course, Uncle Thorin is there too, and he saves the day, and they're both like, one day I'm going to grow up and be just as badass as my uncle. And Uncle Thorin is like, no, I wanted to keep you safe because of all that I've lost of my family and my house and my kingdom and my people. At least this is something I can control. You know? I feel like family is super important to the House of Dorne because there's not that many of them left. So, then I want some more stories where they get home and Dees is like, oh, you guys are all such idiots. But I love you anyway. Because, okay, by the end of the book, she's basically the only person left from the whole House of Dorne, right? And can I just say how great it is that the fandom is only 6 pages long at AO3 right now, but it comes with, it already comes with the word Dorincest. Like, oh, I love it. Yeah, I just. All right, so then we get to more adventures, and Feely and Keely are super, super protective of each other and super, super supportive of each other. And you wouldn't find one within, you know, you find one within 5 feet of the other, basically. They're super close. And on the one hand, the rest of, you know, the dwarfs of the Blue Mountains are sort of like, should we be a little worried about this? Those guys are a little bit off in the head. You know, like, there's something strange about the House of Durin. But at the same time, you go back to the whole, we are indulgent of our young, because there aren't a lot of dwarf kids left. So even though there's something a little bit odd about the latest offspring, the heirs of the House of Durin, no one's going to say anything about it, because, yeah, the last remaining dwarves who are left totally understand that you need to stick close to your kin and keep them safe. But nothing incesty yet. I feel like at the beginning of their expedition with the Hobbit, Feely and Keely are sort of in this place where they're like, I'm super emotionally dependent on you, and I'm physically dependent on you, but I'm not romantically dependent on you yet. Like, I don't know. I just want there to be a lot of pages of, will they, won't they, this is wrong, I am the heir to the crown of my people, and I have to have, you know, offspring to continue the line, because we have lasted for thousands upon thousands of years, and I had ancestors at the, you know, in the last great war against the enemy, and my family once extended for thousands of branches and thousands of years, and my ancestors were buried deep in the foot of the mountain, and it's, you know, such a pressure of tradition and past and ancestry, basically, and it all rests on our shoulders because there's no way that Uncle Thorin is ever going to be having offspring. Uncle Thorin is super close to family, but he's not willing to be making connections with others outside the family. And it's sort of, I feel like it's kind of a foregone conclusion that Uncle Thorin's not going to be having offspring. So it all rests on Feely and Keely, and going back to the whole Dees is teaching them etiquette, you know, and the proper protocols and the, you know, here is how you be a leader of our people. That, yes, they're both going to have to produce offspring someday to continue the line of the House of Doran. But at the same time, Feely and Keely are so wrapped up in each other that they just don't see outside of each other. They're not looking for, you know, an ambassador's daughter to, you know, forge ties with other kingdoms or whatever. They're not looking for someone in their own settlement to continue the line because they're so very wrapped up with each other. So, like, I want one of them to be aware that his, you know, duty is to continue the family line. And the other one to be like, yeah, but you can put that off for the future. And right now, it's not the important thing. The important thing is keeping us together and alive. And just like, you know, he had these feelings and he hid them in his heart because he could not deal with them in the face of whatever. You know, like subtle and building and insidious because, like, I want their closeness as brothers to sort of grow into this, you know, I would do anything for you, including lay myself bare and, you know, and then add sexual advances on top of that. But super stealth and super, like, gnawing on his soul a little bit because maybe Feely is feeling it and Keely is feeling it, but nobody's mentioning anything to the other because it's not something that should be mentioned because, going back to the whole I've got to produce an heir thing, and also, like, just, I don't know if you can see it, but I literally palmed my face. I was like, it was intense. And this, like, angst and this, what do I do about this? And they both sort of acknowledge that there might be a thing if you looked at it in the right way, but no one says anything outright. And there's a lot of like, okay, I'm holding your hand, but it gives me like a feeling in my stomach, but I'm going to ignore that because you are my brother. And I'm going to just sublimate it all into this effort to keep you alive as long as possible. And, you know, just articulate eyes. No. So then we get to the whole grand quest to take back Erebor from the Fire Drake Smog. And I think I read this in a fic someplace, and I really like the idea that Keely would have been, you know, he was younger, but he would have been more advantageous to a party of adventurers because he had a long-range weapon, because he was such a fantastic archer and marksman, and that Keely would have come along because Feely wouldn't go without him. Not because Feely was, you know, the best swordsman around. And if anything, they really should have left him behind, if only to continue the House of Doran. You know, you really should not be taking all your heirs on a quest to fight a dragon, because that does not leave anyone behind to rule the kingdom when you die. You know, from a practical standpoint, one of them should not have come. But I can just see it happening that, you know, one of them wearing down the other, down their uncle, or wearing, you know, that they're not going to leave without the other. And I think it was, I don't remember whose fic it was, but they were like, the reason that Feely even came was because he was part of a package deal with Feely. Feely is blonde, Keely is dark. And the reason that Feely came is because they wanted Keely in the party, and Feely was part of a package deal. And I want a story about that, too. How Feely is the older brother, and he is the responsible one, and everyone's always like, you know, because he's the next direct heir, and everyone's always, you know, you have to be solemn, and you have to be serious, and you have to be, you know, able to stand up for the welfare of your people. And Keely is a little bit more, all right, you're still an heir, but you have a little bit more room to be playful and obnoxious and rambunctious and crazy and, you know, sowing your wild oats or whatever. And just, how does that pour back into the relationship between the two brothers? Is Feely okay with the whole, like, I feel like he would really place a lot of stock in the I'm the big brother, I must protect you kind of mindset. But I feel like Keely also is like, you're my brother and I must save you because of all the times you have saved me. I owe you my life and my allegiance, not just because technically you're going to be my king, but because you are my direct blood and you are the best big brother who's been there my entire life, and you've saved me from, you know, scrapes and wargs and overambitious suitors and all of that. And just, oh, and now I've lost track of the story that I really wanted to, pre-Hobbit House of Durin feelings. And then, obviously, fic for when everyone dies, because I don't want anybody to die. I want Finley and Keely to go off and be awesome. Yeah, so that was half an hour of feelings or something. Any or all of the above. If you wrote it, I would podfic it. I pinky swear. Just, oh, Finley and Keely. And stuff about, like, Keely being super young compared to everybody. He barely has scruff. He doesn't have a beard. I'm like, just, and Uncle Thorin being like, I have to protect my nephews in these battles that we are facing with the orcs and the wargs and the goblins and everything. But at the same time, I have to be a competent leader and protect all of my people. I can't show obvious, blatant favoritism because, like, these guys all pledge their loyalty and their lives to this quest. I have to honor them all equally. But at the same time, like, I'm super distracted by making sure my nephews don't get squished to a pulp by storm giants. You know? Just like, So yes, if you have Hobbit feelings, feel free to feel them in my direction. I'll feel them right back. I need to go find some more Hobbit fic. It's a pot fic. Bye.